Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's June the 22nd, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the Western world spends $280 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars, on agricultural subsidies. The Senate is not satisfied with Japan's promise to open its borders to U.S. beef and sets up a plan for retaliation. And one WTO pundit says, don't bet on it. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau on the biofuels industry. And then, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. July wheat at 365.5, down 6.5 cents today. September futures at 382.25. They were down 7 for the day. July wheat in Kansas City, $4.79, off 3. Corn pit now, July contract, 230.5, down 2.25. September's at 241.75. They were down 2.5 cents today. And the December futures at 257 were off 2. The March contract, 269, down 1.75. July soybeans, 583, down 3.25. The August contract at 589.5, down 3.75. And September beans at $5.95. They finished the day 4.75 lower. November contract, 608.75, were off 4 cents. July bean meal futures, 176.50, down $1.60 for the day. And July bean oil at 24.49. They were up a nickel. And the feeder cattle August contract, $114.85 over at the Mercantile Exchange, $1.65 higher. June live cattle at $82.62, 100 weight were up 87.5 cents. And July lean hogs at $74.87 were up 35 for the day. The outside markets, very quickly taking a look at those numbers, finished up like this, or trading like this actually. Crude oil now trading the August contract at $70.80 a barrel, up 47 cents. The CRB at 336.05, down 0.7. And the dollar at 86.39, and that's up 0.61. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,013, down 65 at the hour. And July gold at $583.10, off $5.60 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does every Thursday afternoon, is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hey, Todd.
Tell me about your cash market charts and what they've been showing you over the last month, and if that differs at all from what's been happening in Chicago.
No, there hasn't been any changes, any differences whatsoever. I mean, we have seen maybe some improvement in the basis level, depending upon which location. There is a little firmness kind of going on, but nothing dramatically. But no, the trend turned down in corn. Basically, when it failed to make new highs there in early June, and basically since that early June high, we've been kind of in a steady decline. So that shows up both on the cash chart as well as the futures chart on corn. When you go over and take a look at the soybeans, been basically a sideways-type situation with a biases to an underlining sideways to higher. No violation has taken place of the April-May-type trend line. However, today, though, the lead futures did go down right and sitting right on it with its 3-4 cent lower close. Cash market probably do the same today when you take in today's loss. But when you look at the underlining trends, The last week's decline did bust through some key important uptrend lines in the corn market.
As I was taking a look at some of the weather forecasts, there's hot weather out there, but it is the summertime. Iowa has been dry, got some decent rains last week, and it appears that if you go out a week or so, the calls for rainfall are pretty good across much of the Midwest. Are we looking for more pressure as we go further into this season?
Well, as long as the trade views the crop as improving or getting bigger, and that's what generally favorable weather does, it just adds pressure to the market. I mean, especially this time of year. Now, you know, if the weather pattern would turn drier and warmer and we would begin to see a couple of weeks of some crop rating declines or some rating level declines of significant proportions in one area of the Corn Belt or not, and the forecast would stay dry, then the trade perceives as overall supplies are shrinking or the crop is getting smaller, and then the market has to reflect that then with higher prices. But what the market is reflecting right now is generally favorable growing conditions. It's not ideal. No year is really ideal, but I suppose depending upon how you look at it. But it's the weather forecasts look non-threatening, and I think non-threatening at the moment is key. You know, threatening is, you know, bring those temperatures back up into the mid-90s and keep it dry. But if you, you know, you keep temperatures kind of in the normal deal, which is upper 80s, and even with less moisture, you're not putting much stress on the crop.
Next Friday, USDA will release, not this Friday, but a week from Friday, USDA will release its crop numbers for acreage, corn and beans. Are we low enough at this point if we happen to come in with an 80 million acre corn crop?
No. If we come in, you know, the only thing that would keep this market firm, I think, at this point would be that USDA would validate their 78 million number. I think if they would validate that, that might be enough to kind of hold this market together at current levels. Might even stir up a little dead cat bounce of some kind that was maybe a little more meaningful. But if the USDA comes out with a larger planting, I think you have to view that as negative. But again, you know, early July weather is going to be key. But barring any kind of threatening weather, no, a larger acreage estimate would, I think, tip the scales and keep pressure on the market.
Well, that doesn't sound particularly good for the market one way or the other in that case. I mean, if the market were to come in at 78 and this is okay for 78 and 80 is lower than this, then that's not a good sign, I wouldn't think.
No, well, I mean, that's just my opinion. I mean, other people have different opinions, but a couple things with USDA's balance sheet. Number one, they're probably too low on their harvested acres. If we planted 78, they're probably a million too low on their harvested, so you could probably find a million acres there. So there's 150 million bushels. And then, of course, if USDA, you know, bubbles it up a million or 2 million, you find a couple more, so then you find maybe another 150 to 300 million bushels. So all of a sudden, you know, the crop's getting bigger, carry out starting to grow, the market has to reflect that. The key probably to the corn market is whatever yield you want to put on that. I mean, if you want to say the last 2 years was just an aberration and those high yields are not part of the equation anymore, and you fall back to something that we had 2 years ago, back in the mid-40s, well, then that changes the complexion of the balance sheet. But if you feel that there's been enough improvement in genetic seed that we've bubbled up the trend line yield to corn to 150 versus 145, and then we have better conditions than we had last year, and you take that yield up to 153 to 155, we got more corn around than what we can use. So, you know, it depends upon the yield. Next week's report will be this part of that process. It, you know, the acreage definition will be a pivotal point, and then, of course, weather conditions. But, you know, if you have generally normal type weather, you know, people are going to plug in 150 plus bushels in the yield column, and that's going to keep the corn there's plenty of corn to go around at that point in time, you know, especially given the large carryout supplies that's kind of moving into the marketplace right now.
Has it been hard for AgriVisor to talk with clientele about segregating out ethanol demand in the future, confirmed or unconfirmed at this point, as plants are being built or proposed, compared to what reality and fundamentals today might say about the marketplace?
Well, I don't know if I really understand your question, Todd. I mean,
What I want to know is it hard to keep a guy from getting excited about the ethanol in the future and bringing that far enough forward that he's really wanting to jump the gun and make this corn worth a lot more money than
I think the market got carried away with that. I think that was part of the bubble that we saw here during May, April and May. Now, I'm optimistic that ethanol demand is going to grow, but I'm also optimistic that the U.S. farmer is going to figure out a way to supply that demand, and prices ain't going to be sharply higher. I mean, ever since I got out of college in the early 70s, I've heard this business that, you know, we're going to have to feed the world and all this kind of rigmarole, and for some reason the yields keep climbing higher. Farmers get better at producing crops, and we always end up with a bigger supply than what we can usually use, other than every one in 5 years or every one in 6 years, we end up with a real short crop, and that strong demand base then balloons prices up to a level that you have to cut back on demand. So, I think it's great to have, a renewable fuels market, and farmers are able to capture part of that renewable fuels, we all have a tendency to want to think things are real bullish. I have a feeling that I think things got carried a little way, got a little far ahead of themselves. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be sitting at, you know, $1.90 corn all year either. I don't want to give that impression. But the market did stretch out a little bit of all this ethanol, and thinking that crude oil prices are going to go to, you know, $70, $80, $90 or $100, they may do that. But what happens if they fall back to, you know, the 50s, and we start stabilizing at the 50s, and gasoline's down at 2.25? That there won't be as much excitement on renewable fuels as there was if we were at 3.25. So you got to understand that the market, you know, reflects all that kind of stuff. But no, farmers have to, you know, they have to kind of still look at price. They got to look at profitability when they make their decisions.
One final question for you. This is kind of a thinking question, I guess. When you look out and see the ethanol demand, does it change from the farmer's point of view the transportation and distribution needs of in the local area? So I'm guessing I'm asking, do they need to build bins or think about it over the long run to take advantage of anything, or does it really not make too much difference in their marketing process?
Well, bins always have bins if they're used properly. If farmers build bins and use them properly in their marketing plan, they pay for themselves. And they can avoid sales at times when, you know, the market is, the pipeline is full of inventory and basis levels are wider, and they can use that. Unfortunately, bins also can be a detriment to your marketing plan, because you can kind of get into the rut that the Cubs are. Well, they'll always be next season, you know. There'll always be another marketing opportunities, and you end up storing that stuff all the way to the end, and then you end up selling it at the lowest price of the year. So, but bins, you know, can be used in a marketing plan very advantageously, but it still gets down to the marketing of your grain. Bins is an avenue to help you do a better job of that. That's not the answer for your marketing plan, though.
As a Cardinal fan, I'll say just one thing. One game does not make a season. Okay. All right. Thanks, okay. Dan.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Dan Swicker with AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, joins us on Thursday afternoons. Here's the forecast for this afternoon. A severe thunderstorm watch in effect for parts of southern and eastern Illinois and most of southern Indiana. That until 7 o'clock central time tonight, 8 in the eastern time zone. Ed Kieser says tonight in northern Illinois, it'll become partly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. Some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows from 57 in northern Illinois to 72 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now with today's news.
In agricultural news, the Belgium-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says the world's richest nations spent $280 billion on farm subsidies in 2005. The European Union was the biggest spender at $134 billion. Japan handed out $47 billion in farm support, and the U.S. spent $43 billion. The report says EU subsidies made up 32% of farmers' income last year. The U.S. was unchanged from 2004 at 16%. Senators say they'll continue to move forward with a bill that requires Japan to reopen its market to U.S. beef by August 31st or face retaliatory sanctions. That despite yesterday's announcement that Japan potentially would lift its ban after an inspection tour of U.S. beef facilities that will conclude in mid-July. Bill co-sponsor Montana Republican Conrad Burns says in his words, "Our goal is a resumption of trade, not promises that trade may resume." The feeling was echoed by Kansas Republican Pat Roberts.
Well, there's a framework in place, but it's just a framework for a process. We've been having frameworks for processes now for 3 years. And then all of a sudden something else, pops out of the woodwork, and then we're back to, ban on U.S. beef, which is costing our producers $3.2 billion. So while I'm at least gratified that there's a process in place, you can't ship process.
USDA is worried that Japan might pick and choose which U.S. beef exporters it will deal with. The bill would require the Treasury Department to impose $3.1 billion in sanctions annually on Japanese exports if U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab does not certify by August 31st that Japan is open to U.S. beef. Roberts says U.S. patience has run out.
And if this is what it takes to get the market back open and to alleviate a $3.2 billion hit on the cattle industry, so be it.
USDA Ag Secretary Mike Johanns says he opposes the bill, but that Congress is reading the situation correctly. Yesterday's announcement does not guarantee reopening of Japan's border.
The one thing I don't want to do is create an impression up on Capitol Hill that we've accomplished more than what we've really accomplished. I want to be very realistic about this. We still have a ways to go. Beef is still not back in Japan. It is encouraging that they're recognizing that the day is coming when it will return to the marketplace, but it's not there yet.
For the sanctions to go into effect, Congress must complete the FY 2007 Agricultural Appropriations Conference report before the August recess. The international trade consultant of DTB Associates is not optimistic that next week's WTO meeting in Geneva will produce a Doha Round world trade deal. Paul Drazik says don't bet on it.
The message I'm hearing from European agriculture ministers, especially in France, on market access is no way, we're not going to give any more. And what I'm hearing from our own agriculture community is unless Europe's willing to budge substantially on market access, we're not going to give any more on domestic supports. Many people think we've already offered too much.
Drazik says the EU and U.S. are just too far apart in their positions to find compromise. The National Corn Growers Association is off on an 11-day trade mission to China and Vietnam. Spokesperson Ken McCauley.
China's in the news all the time, how much corn they're going to need, and we had this scheduled for quite a while now, but it's really, really exciting getting to drop in on a customer that's not very big at the moment, but could really be in there to change our market. So we're hoping to convince them that we have enough corn if they decide to need it, and we'll be there. So you know, the world's talking about corn right now. It's pretty exciting.
NCGA says it will also be making a stop in New Zealand. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you that you can pick up all of the ag programming you hear on the radio station at willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's listener opinion forum, Amy Murray of the Champaign County Farm Bureau takes up the biofuels industry.
The summer vacation season emphasizes rising fuel costs for many American families. As fuel prices rise, many people have to budget for this additional expense. These high fuel prices are affecting everyone, and farmers are facing the same challenge. They are greatly affected by high fuel prices because their operations rely heavily on running equipment that requires large amounts of fuel. With the crops in the ground and farmers spraying their fields, farmers are constantly battling this issue, just as the general public is, but in higher quantities. This is a significant increase in variable input costs for farmers without any correlating increase in profit. Fuel prices are a monetary concern for anyone filling up their tanks at a gas station, and they are a major setback for farming operations as well when looking at inputs and how this is affecting their bottom lines. As we are seeing gasoline and diesel fuel prices consistently raise, we are also seeing an increase in ethanol and soy biodiesel interest. Ethanol plant construction is being planned in the area, and biodiesel use is also being encouraged. People want to rely less on foreign energy resources, and what better way than using crops grown in our own backyard right here in central Illinois? Areas that have biofuel production are going to see great economic benefits without any risk. The domestic demand for grain will increase, and farmers are going to see monetary benefits from this. The United States economy is constantly facing new challenges. The high cost of fuel is one of the hot topics right now, and the American agriculture industry is offering a solution to this problem. For the Champaign County Farm Bureau, I'm Amy Murray.
Amy Murray's comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850 or email ag@willuc.edu.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Joining us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at what's been happening in the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
How's the basis holding up across your area and along the river, please?
Really, basis has been a little bit stronger here. The bean basis has been fairly steady. The corn basis has improved pretty good, 1 to 3 cents in the last week or so here. Really, if I look back on the bids from a week ago, were only really down about a penny on the cash corn, even though the future is down a bit more than that.
And then as you look out over the next week, what are your expectations?
I would expect expecting corn to be kind of choppy here going into the report and everything a week from tomorrow. I would think the basis would probably continue to move. I think the cash movement from the farmers really slowed down. I think the elevator corn, most of them would like to get down the road a little ways and make sure that we're going to get a crop here and probably have some more to move after they see some good pollination weather. So I guess right now I see the corn basis continuing to improve a little bit.
Most of the elevators, in your opinion, still pretty full?
Not nearly as full as they were 30 days ago or 45 days ago. I think there's been heavy movement here in the last 30 days. Every place I've gone, I've seen trucks or rail cars being loaded. You get to that 1st of June period, and you kind of get to a point where we need to get started emptying things out so we can get ready for harvest.
And then your bids for the day?
204 on the corn, 219 for fall, 550 for beans, 572 for fall.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Don.
Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Dirksen Federal Building in Chicago's Loop has reopened after being locked down for several hours. Authorities issued the all-clear this afternoon, but they say the suspect who prompted the lockdown remains at large. The suspect is Larnell Rogers, who's accused of lying to a federal agent. Authorities say Rogers arrived late for a court hearing today and then fled when he learned that a warrant had been issued for his arrest during his absence. Rogers is considered to be nonviolent. U of I police say a 27% decline in assault and battery cases on the Urbana-Champaign campus is encouraging. But Public Safety Director Chris Fitzpatrick says an alarming number of the remaining cases are tied to alcohol consumption. In nearly two-thirds of the aggravated assault and battery cases during the school year just ended, either the suspect, victim, or both had used alcohol or drugs. Illinois teens will now have to get more practice behind the wheel before they receive their driver's licenses. Governor Rob Blagojevich today signed a new law that doubles the amount of required driving time under adult supervision from 25 to 50 hours. 10 of those hours must be night driving. Health officials and vaccine makers are meeting in Chicago today to discuss ways to increase the number of Americans who get annual flu shots. Health officials want people to know that almost everyone now falls into a group recommended to get one of the shots. But under current rates, only about a third of the people who should get flu shots are expected to get them. A northern Indiana dairy farm is going to be a partner in an ethanol plant powered by cow manure. Fair Oaks Dairy and Bion Environmental Technologies of New York will start work on the plant sometime next year. Under the plant's design, waste from every 1,000 dairy cows would be able to provide enough energy to produce 1 million gallons of ethanol. Dancer and choreographer Catherine Dunham is being remembered this afternoon in her adopted city of East St. Louis. A three-hour celebration of Dunham's life and work is taking place at Lincoln Middle School, not far from Dunham's former home and museum. Catherine Dunham died last month at the age of 96. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's a Thursday afternoon. This is the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason, joined now by Pete Levitt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast here in the Midwest and around the globe. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Rainfall in our near and far term possibilities across the Midwest?
Yes, there are. Mostly in the near term, it's mostly the southern half of the state that gets it as a weather front parallel to and just north of the Ohio River Valley. Remains rather active during this period. And so we're going to see some showers there late today and tonight. Up north, maybe just a few light showers with a weak disturbance coming through the principal area precip farther south. Then over the weekend, a clearing, cooler day tomorrow, and then by Saturday, another weak disturbance over the plains will move across the region and should produce just scattered and very light activity, I think, late Saturday or Sunday. All in all, the outlook for the week is for temperatures below normal for the most part, which is to say very comfortable for this time of year, and only minimal shower activity tonight down south and maybe late Saturday, Sunday across the state in light amounts.
Last week, I believe you and I talked a little bit about rumblings of drier conditions out in Iowa, the conditions that had been prevailing at that point. Did the rainfall alleviate much of that over the week?
It kind of strings out the dryness a little bit because it isn't heavy enough or widespread enough to put an end to the below normal soil moisture profiles there. And so what's happening is it's just extending the period which we need for enough moisture to get things straightened out. So it's a western corn belt, I think, that looks to have the problem. And as a matter of fact, the 90-day forecast that was generated by the National Weather Services past week shows above normal temperatures over all of the western half of the country and precip close to normal, but the hints in the southern plains being dry there, my guess would be that they could probably promote a little bit below normal precip for the western Corn Belt, which means a potential for some problems there. The eastern Corn Belt just in great shape. Plenty of moisture, temperatures are moderate, no problems there.
How about the northern area? Minnesota ranks in at number 4, I believe, or number 5.
Yeah, they are also in an area that's had a little bit more shower activity this month, but I think is in line to be dry and on the hot side as we move into summer. So I would put Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska as being the areas that we have to be careful about, but the eastern Corn Belt just fine.
Thanks much, Pete. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Peter Levitt joined us every Thursday afternoon on the Closing Market Report right here on WILL AM 580. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning for our pre-opening commodity market report. That comes to you at 8:49 with your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. My name's Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.